Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris and you're watching The Future is Female. This is the show where we find the extraordinary in every woman. My guest today is Malaysia's first professionally trained archaeologist, who in 1991 discovered the 74,000-year-old Paleolithic stone assemblage site in Kota Tampan, Lenggong Valley. This alongside the 11,000-year-old Perak Man, which is the oldest human skeleton discovered in Malaysia. And most recently, she was accorded this year's Merdeka Award for Outstanding Scholastic Achievement. The Merdeka Awards recognizes individuals and organizations whose works not only contribute to the country's growth, but have also inspired greatness among Malaysians. The recipients, they live and breathe the Merdeka spirit. So during this period of celebrating Merdeka and the formation of our country, a period, I might say, of liberation of spirit and of coming together, I couldn't have asked for a better guest. I'm delighted to welcome to the show Emeritus Professor Dr. Siti Zuraina Abdul Majid. Professor Zuraina, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Well, archaeology, I was hoping we could begin our conversation there. It's one of those disciplines, one of those careers, I think, sounds thrilling to many of us. You know, for me personally, I'm always picturing Indiana Jones or Lara Croft, Tomb Raider. I was wondering how you came to love archaeology and not only love this, but also build a successful career from it at a time when archaeology was not an established discipline in Malaysia.
Thank you, Melissa. It was not love at first sight. It was not an ambition. I just drifted into it. So for anybody who has no ambition, don't worry. You will find something. Remember in the 1940s and 1950s when I was growing up, there wasn't a field called archaeology. But there was something called being a stewardess, and that was my ambition. That was
So how did you go from wanting to be a stewardess to the field of archaeology and making one of the most significant archaeological discoveries in the country?
Well, when I wanted to be a stewardess, I think I wanted to explore. I was very interested to see the world. And I think it was that trait in me that was latent until I was in university and I was exposed to Chinese archaeology.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Okay. So tell me about building a career in archaeology. What has it taught you? This may have been accidental, so you are the accidental archaeologist. but over the years, what has it taught you about mankind's relationship with our world, our nature, our setting, but also with the future and the past, with our history and our heritage?
Yeah, surprisingly, you know, I found spiritual values in it that we adhere to that was present in that time. The feeling of life is not just temporary. Life is temporary. There is another world. And you see that even in prehistoric times, that belief that there is a journey after death. Also love and care. They love, they care, they buried the dead very politely, very respectfully. And one also is exposed to technological development from almost zero to our AI today. So that range of technological development sort of makes me wonder what next after AI, because it looks like we've gone so far and so fast in the last few decades.
Well, that's quite fascinating because you discovered this stone tool site where they were making stone tools. And now, you know, you're talking about this age of AI and big data. It feels like it spans an entire, the entire spectrum of technological advancements from Paleolithic Stone Age to the digital age of the 21st century.
You've hit on it, Melissa. Archaeology gives you that special time and space mind that you don't get from many disciplines. I can move from 2 million years to today and I can fill in the gaps, you know, of the different type of the different happenings in technology and a lot of other things. So it's wonderful in that it gives you that journey that you can fill in terms of space as well. What was happening where, at what time?
Yeah.
So I think that is a very useful mental exercise that we can go through.
I can also imagine that it keeps one humble because you think about the temporariness of your and the smallness of you in this entire setting of 74,000 years or 11,000 year old Perak man. You think about your little existence and it puts a lot of things into context, I must say, Prof. Zuraina. I do want to ask you about being the first in this field. And it must have been, you must have had a specific set of challenges trying to establish your career or a discipline or trying to even educate people as to what archaeology is, what an archaeologist does. Did you face any specific challenges early, particularly early in your career?
Yeah, I faced several types of challenges. The challenge of having to convince people who are not exposed to archaeology and don't understand what archaeology is about and look at it just in terms of job opportunities. You know, so I had to convince the government, I had to convince many bodies that this is something that is not what they think, but it can be, you know, something much wider than that in scope. I also had to convince people who thought that this was a one-woman show and they didn't have faith in that one woman. And, and I must say that University Science Malaysia understood the situation early enough and gave me sufficient support at the beginning.
That's wonderful. And in that support allowed you to make significant discoveries for not just Malaysia, not just our country, but also the archaeological world. Let's talk about Perak Man. I mean, discovered in Gua Gunung Runtuh Cave, he is Southeast Asia's oldest, most complete human skeleton. What have we learned from Perak Man after all these years?
We have applied the maximum number of technologies that's capable of analyzing the data that we have. So based on that, we reconstructed his story. We reconstructed the life that he led, reconstructed the environment he lived in, the skills they had, and the beliefs they had. It was a very caring society because he was a man that that lived in that society till the age of 40 to 45, when others would have died at the age of 20 to 25. Oh. So he was probably like an encyclopedia where he could share his knowledge on where to hunt, how to hunt, what to hunt, what to give if you are ill, where to get the herbs. Probably it was that kind of a shaman or a person that was highly respected and cared for. Remember, he was born with a congenital deformity, so he would not have been able to do the normal things that other people did.
Oh, what kind of birth defect are we talking about?
we're talking about a man who cannot, who had difficulty in walking. So he wouldn't be able to hunt and climb like other others in his society.
What is the significance of this discovery in terms of the way, not just how humans lived, but how humans traveled, the patterns for migration? Does it tell us anything about why he was there and where he came from?
Even before the Perak Man, we had discovered several sites that's much older than the Perak Man and much older than Kota Tampan in Bukit Jawa. That's about 500,000-600,000 years ago. But it's not fascinating to a lot of people because it's just broken stone tools. It's not, you know, stone tools that are beautiful, and it's not a skeleton. There was no skeleton there. So it doesn't appeal to people very much, but it is very significant in terms of the story of mankind. It pinpoints Kota Tampan as being the path that early man took out of Africa and dispersed throughout the world. There was a branch in mainland Southeast Asia where one branch would go up to China, another branch down to Peninsula Malaysia, Sundaland, to Java, and down to south to Australia. So this, we thought that Southeast Asia would have played a role, but we had no evidence for it. So now Kota Tampan or Lenggong is the evidence. Now this also makes it the capital city, the earliest capital city of Malaysia, because for a long, long time, for hundreds and thousands of years, that was the only place in Malaysia that was inhabited.
Well, so that means that Malaysia, or Peninsula Malaysia at least, was on the route from Africa to wherever else early man went to, you know, to live. That's remarkable. I didn't know that. I do want to ask about archaeology. I mean, was this, how did you stumble across this site? Was it you know, trying to think about a dig, for instance? How does an archaeologist plan or map that an area out in thinking that this could be a significant archaeological site? We could make some discoveries here.
Okay, what led me to Lenggong, in other words?
Yes.
Yeah. I previously worked in Sarawak, in Guanya, and I had worked in a number of other sites. But I was most concerned about a then current thinking, which was that Semenanjung Malaysia was not important. It was not part of any major discoveries to be made. So I went through the literature and I found a writing in 1935 and 1950 of two British civil servants who took on archaeology as a hobby, and they found what they thought were stone tools. And these were in the British Museum and in Raffles Museum in Singapore. So I went to these places to examine whether or not these were really stone tools, because the controversy at that time was over these stone tools. A lot of people said they were not stone tools. They were not man-made. They were normal pebbles that had been broken, that broke along the river, you know. So when I examined them through, there were both non-tools as well as tools. So the fact that there were tools was encouraging for me. I said, okay, let me go. So I looked at the map, I looked at the contour maps, I did the usual clue, searching for clues. But when I went down to the site, and this was the first time I was doing it that way, I went down to the site, oh my goodness, the dot in the map is actually a huge area, and I'm looking for a dot in this huge area. So that didn't seem promising. And there was no one to support me, no one who believed in me, except my husband. And he said, no, use our money, you know, go, look for it. So that was what I did. he funded me, or we funded ourselves. Alphonse funded my trip, which was not cheap. It was quite expensive. For us, we were just professors, you know, we were just lecturers at the university. So I went, and of course, it was not easy. I opened several trenches. You never hear about the unsuccessful trenches. You just hear about the successful ones. But there were several of unsuccessful empty trenches that didn't produce anything. Then I was rather tired of looking for the sites. So I was together with a geologist friend of mine, Professor Chia. And we were tired, and we just rested by the roadside. There was a road beside a road cutting that was covered by creepers. So we chatted, and then I just played around with the creepers, lifted the creeper, and then I thought, whoops, a whole level of pebbles, one straight level of pebbles, which seems to indicate that either that was a river bed or something, you know. So I said, oh, look, I told him. So he said, oh, it could be a riverbed. Oh, well, so what? You know, it's a riverbed. It's not, you know, man-made stones. So then I pushed my tools in to try and dig out very quickly to see whether they were all river pebbles, or whether there could be some stone tools that were brought down by the river. So I did find. And I was so amazed. I said, look, it's a stone tool. Is it natural to you? He's a geologist, so he would know what's natural, right? He said, no, this is not natural. He said, well, it is man-made, I said. So I marked the area, went back, and told Museum Negara, because it was a one-woman show, you know, there was no one else to go along with me. So I said, can you spare some of your technical staff to come along with me? And they said, okay, we'll, and I said, and also a van or jeep. So they came with this A-team, black A-team kind of jeep, you know, an old one with an old driver. And they brought along one technical staff. They too didn't have much faith, you see. Okay, we'll loan you one technical staff, which meant that I would have to employ a lot more local people to help me. So I excavated that trench. And I was shocked to find that I could put together broken pieces of stones, which meant that it was not brought down by the river. It was in situ. It was an undisturbed site. And voila, undisturbed site is Eureka, you know, in archaeology, because it will tell you an accurate story. It's not a loose find that's brought down by the river, but that this is a site. You are the first eyes, the first set of eyes to look at it, and you are the first pair of hands to touch it. Oh, it was just amazing. But I was still not very sure how much story it would tell me. I was not very sure how much it would hold in terms of types of artifacts, you know. So I worked on it, and after about 4 days, I had a hunch that this is going to be very important, and this is going to be very long-term. I will need, you know, good funding for this. And as we were excavating, I have a very serious fear of snakes. Oh. And 6 baby cobras came out. And and I had some estate boys, Indian boys, working for me. And they said, oh, cikgu, ini banyak bagus.
Oh, it's a sign.
Because it's a cobra, you know, their god, okay. Or their snake god. And I said, oh, yeah, but not for me. You know, serious fears of snakes. And then we did a full excavation, at the end of which I found out that if I had moved just 2 meters away from my original discovery spot, I would have found nothing. That spot was at the edge of the site. So if I had just gone away a little bit, moved, you know, stopped at a different spot, I wouldn't have got it. That's why so much of it is, you know, God's help.
Definitely divine intervention,
Right,
some
because you
way,
don't know what's under the
somehow.
ground. Yeah.
That's amazing. Do you think that there are still more discoveries to be made? I do wonder, you know, in this age, it feels like every bit of the earth has been trampled on or dug up. Do you think there are still archaeological finds out there that, you know, there's still more ahead of us?
I think so. I think so. I think there are.
Okay, that's good. That's very optimistic to know. Professor Zuraina, I do want to ask you a little bit about the UNESCO inscriptions that you helped obtain for Melaka Georgetown and the Batu Besurat in Terengganu, among the many that you have helped. What I would like to know from you is how Malaysia has approached I guess, our history and our heritage, the conservation of these heritage sites. What's your vision for the way the country approaches heritage conservation?
That's a very tough question because, yes, it's a very
It
tough question because I was once working in the Heritage Department of National Heritage, trying to, you know, establish it. That was almost 20 years ago. And so I'm much behind time. I retired in 2014. So many things have happened since I'm not, you know, very aware of, but it is something we really needed when we established it. And it's got a very good act for protecting our heritage.
Right.
And
But
I think
in
there
terms,
should be a political will to do a good job of it.
but in terms of just our societal approach, a general approach, particularly, you know, for the people watching tonight, what message would you like to leave Malaysians about the importance of our history, importance of preserving our history, of conserving our heritage?
I have really very little to say about that because each of us carries our heritage along with us. And we all have different weights that we give it. But whatever it is, culture evolves.
Professor Zuraina, I want to ask you about the Malaysia's approach to our natural heritage, to our history. Do we appreciate enough what we have in this country?
If I look at Lenggong, a site that has got World Heritage status, something that other countries vie for, which has a big economic impact, it's a golden goose that has laid a golden egg. But what have we done about that? Nothing. And we couldn't have had better arrangement of the of constellation. The MB is from Lenggong, the Member of Parliament is from Lenggong, and I don't know why. I really don't know why. Is it a lack of interest in history? Is it a lack of, I don't know. I just feel we have a lot of trained people in this country, but not that many educated people. That, you know, they can't see it. And there's, you know, there's not much effort.
It could also be the what we prioritize. We often prioritize development and commercial success, but we don't n normally prioritize the richness of our heritage, of our naturals, our natural world, which Malaysia is so rich on. We often look at other countries and envy their economic success. Maybe it's also an issue of priority, where we place our pride.
I think Sarawak and Sabah have done very well in promoting their natural heritage, in promoting World Heritage Sites, UNESCO World Heritage Sites of Mulu and Kinabalu. We have done very well in promoting Melaka and Georgetown. But Lenggong is just dead. And I don't know, maybe because they can't see the prehistoric people. They can't see, you know, because that requires creativity in development, imagination, how to develop it, not just for ourselves, but for the world, because it has a piece of the history of mankind. And we have to develop it within the guidelines of UNESCO so that we don't, so that we protect the site while we develop the site. But so much can be done, but I don't know who should do it first or what should be done first. I don't know. But I would love to see it develop, because when I was doing my work there in the 1980s, I would spend my evenings imagining and listing out and drawing the Lenggong as a tourist attraction. I enjoyed spending my evenings doing that, because I knew it was famous for wild orchids. I knew it had kelulut, honey, you know. And I know it's a beautiful place for caving. And I know it's got beautiful lakes for boating. I know it's fantastic for fishing. And besides, you know, the archaeological component. And it has this, the eruption of Mount Toba. It's got about 6 meters of ash from Mount Toba. It's got so much to offer that would help the local people in developing their economy.
Thank you, Professor Zuraina, for speaking with me today. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you. That was my conversation with Archaeologist Emeritus Professor Datuk Dr. Siti Zuraina Abdul Majid. She is the recipient of this year's Merdeka Award for Outstanding Scholastic Achievement. I'm Melissa Idris, and I will be back with you same time next week for another episode of The Future's Female. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.